One of the day leader says this is one of the biggest differences between life in a medieval village and life now. The guild system, which is, I used to think, oh, guild system, that's just like unions. Not at all. It's much more all-encompassing.
The purpose of the guild system was to eliminate competition. It is there to benefit producers at the expense of consumers, and it limits competition by forbidding advertising, for example, by limiting the number of hours that anyone can work in a given day, by specifically defining the techniques that each craftsman must follow. And it squelches innovation. If you come up with a faster way to make shoes or a cheaper way to make shoes, and the guild finds that you're doing it, they will forbid you to practice this craft anymore, because that would give you an unfair advantage over the other shoemakers, and you'd put them out of business eventually.
And this is something that I find really interesting. So if we look at European history, something happens in the late 1700s, early 1800s that mm-hmm. that creates the conditions for entrepreneurial investment and technological investment. And suddenly, right. unbelievably rapidly, workers become much more productive. At least some workers become far more wealthy.
Right.
Many don't, but some do. This is not happening in the world we're describing in the 12th and 13th century, right? Or do you see any entrepreneurship and anything we'd recognize as entrepreneurship?
You do see it. And the reason why the guilds exist is precisely to stop it from getting the upper hand. And if there hadn't been individuals who were willing to experiment with new production techniques, then there would have been no need for guilds to exist. It's not really until the 14th and 15th centuries, though, that you start to see the guild system begin to break down. And it begins to break down in large part because of the Black Death, and the loss of 1 out of 3 to 1 out of 2 Europeans, and the loss of a four-year period. And that massive die-off and caused an economic crisis that allowed merchants who had capital available to them to begin to buy out artisans. Essentially, they begin to turn them into wage laborers. They buy their tools. They buy their shops. They buy their raw materials. They start to sell the finished product. And so the groundwork for that later period of massive experimentation in the 1700s and 1800s is really laid back in the 1400s and 1500s.
Wow. So if there had not been the Black Death, we wouldn't have the modern world that we live in today?
It certainly is a boon to the merchant class in terms of its relationship to those who are producing the goods that they sell. And and it's this mercantile class that later on will begin to experiment with agricultural techniques in the 18th century. So you can draw a connection of sorts there.
So, but going back to our period, to the 12th and 13th mm-hmm. century, the 1100s and 1200s. So, if I'm a shoemaker, mm-hmm. am I just making shoes? Like I have size 12 shoes, size 8 shoes, whatever, and I'm just making a bunch of shoes?
Yes, you make the specialization of labor in the 12th and 13th centuries is something that's frowned on by guilds, because they see that will lead to skill dilution and to the loss of social status and economic clout. If you're a shoemaker, you make the whole shoe. You make the soles, you make the tongue, you make the eyelets if they have them. You make the entire product from beginning to end, and you make to order. More often than not, you sit in your shop and you don't build shoes on spec. You wait till somebody places an order and then you make the shoe, which helps to account for the very irregular work patterns. For nobody might walk in for 4 days, so for 4 days you just sit and do nothing. But again, the guilds regulate membership very closely. They set a number of shoemakers. There will be 12 shoemakers in this town, and they do that to prevent a glut of production, which would hurt the producers. And so if you're number 13 and you're trying to make shoes and they find you're trying to make shoes, they will knock your house down and they will take your tools and get rid of them and try to have you thrown out of the town.
Really? And would the shoemaker guild side up with the glazier guild and the stool or the woodworker guild or whatever? Would they work together to beat up on this rogue under black market shoemaker?
More often than not, no. And one of the defining characteristics of the guild system is its intense localization. Even within a town, the guilds, there's a pecking order in which some guilds are considered more prestigious than others. And this is made manifest in urban festivals where the guilds will all march in a specific order that is often laid down in the town's laws. And rivalry between these guilds was often intense. And when members of one guild met members of another guild in the street, they'd probably wind up brawling with one another. If you met members of the Shoemaker's Guild from the neighboring town, you'd probably brawl with them as well.
Even though I'm a shoemaker in a shoemaker's
guild. That's right. The idea of workers of the world unite is not one that anyone would have thought of in the 12th and 13th centuries. And the reason why that phrase is so powerful in part is because it flies in the face of a much older pre-modern tradition in which the workers of the world brawled with one another and were intensely proud of their own town and of their own guild within that town, to the exclusion of ties to other guilds and to other places.
So thinking about this economically, what I'm finding confusing is there is so much money left on the table. I mean, we now know with the benefit of hindsight that if the shoemakers or the clothmakers or whoever else got together and said, hey, guys, forget this controlling our production. Right. Let's make as much as we possibly can. Let's flood the market. We'll make a lot less on each one, but we'll sell a lot more units. People will not buy one pair of shoes every 10 years. They'll buy one pair of shoes every season or every few months. Eventually, we can start selling it to those neighboring towns and even to other countries, and we'll all be much richer. Yes. And according to, you know, a basic principle of modern economics is if there's a situation where everybody could be made much richer, someone will think of it and someone will take advantage of it. Why? So on the one hand, I can see why each guild member doesn't want any other guild member to do that. But why do they – why didn't anybody think of this? You know, when a few hundred years later, everybody's thinking about this.
Right. Well – two factors, one cultural and the other technological. The cultural one is that that the Christian milieu of the time regards money-making as a sordid activity. You know, the usurers, those who lend money at interest, are considered among the worst sinners out there. And Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century says there's something sordid about selling and buying goods, that it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. So you have these strong cultural constraints working against trying to amass as much wealth as possible. The technological problem is transportation costs. The idea of mass producing goods and then flooding markets with them and trying to maximize profits by having razor thin profit margins but large number of sales, it's not possible when overland transportation is as expensive as it was in the 12th and 13th centuries. You couldn't move grain profitably overland probably more than 40 or 50 miles. At that point, it was just too expensive. And many times there were famines in the 12th and 13th century where there was plenty of food 50 miles away, but it cost too much to load up carts and move it overland. The only economical way to move goods was by water during the Middle Ages. And until those transportation problems were overcome, it really, I think, was not possible to conceive of a world where instead of trying to make a few sales and make as much profit on those few sales and abandon that for a world where you're just going to make a large number of sales and a small amount of profit on each one.
I see. Because Adam Smith wrote about how there will be specialization to the extent of the size of the market.
Right.
And the market was effectively 50 miles or even less.
Yes, and it is intensely local.
And when you do see goods being shipped long distances, it's things that have huge value for the weight, right? Spices.
Precisely. That's right. Even cloth, which is Europe's main export to the rest of the world in the 12th and 13th century, even cloth is starting to – you've reached the limit of what it's economically profitable to ship, considering the value versus the weight. And certainly medieval merchants, they wanted to deal in items such as pepper and spices that weighed very little and that were quite valuable. It's a sad, sad world when money is king.